This is Seismic Sessions, enabling the financial services industry, a podcast show dedicated to two things, revenue enablement and the financial services sector. Join us as we feature experts and leaders across the financial services industry who discuss innovative and impactful ways to sell, market and deliver memorable client experiences through enablement. Let's get this Seismic Session started.
Welcome to today's Seismic Session. Today we're going to be talking about the evolution of brand in financial services. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Gemma Livermore, Head of FS Marketing for our international business.
Hi, Rachel. Good to be here again.
Good to see you, Gemma. I'm also joined by Alana Nensel, Global Head of Brand, Creative and Digital at Janus Henderson. Hi, Alana.
Hi. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for being here. And Maddie Albon, Brand Manager at Peel Hunt. Good
Hello.
To have you here, Maddie.
Good to have you here in our podcast studio.
Absolutely. And this is an exciting one for us because we're actually at Peel Hunt's podcast studios today. So thanks for hosting us.
That's all right. It's good to all be in person chatting.
Yeah, lovely. It makes a real difference.
Yeah.
So to kick things off, as our regular listeners will know, we usually start by thinking about what FS, enabling FS, means to them. So if I could start with you, Maddie, what does enabling financial services mean to you?
I think that enabling financial services, especially in my role, is definitely about the efficiency. Things move so fast when you work in marketing. I think there's always so much to keep up with. You're across all the different business areas, you've always got so much to do. So finding the most efficient way to do things is very important and crucial to this role because there's always so much on.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that, Maddie. And Alana, if I could come to you, what does enabling financial services mean?
Yeah, thanks. If I look at it in my role, which is how I will sort of tackle that, in my role, I'm thinking about how can I enable my colleagues at Janus Henderson to better serve our clients. So I'm thinking, they actually talk a lot about brand being air cover. So the sales teams will say, I need air cover. I need someone to know who Janus Henderson is when I walk into an office because that's going to make my job so much easier.
I like that way of looking at it.
I do too. So I'm thinking about air cover. We're trying to give them the tools they need so that they can spend their time doing what they do best, right? So we're trying to minimize busy work, minimize difficulties so that they can be thinking about, everyone in the firm can be thinking about, how could we be doing this better for our clients? So if we're doing our jobs, we're doing that.
I think that's a lot about like automation as well, trying to, you know, as creatives in this industry, finding those ways to automate a lot of things, especially when it comes to branding and minimizing their time being spent on those like little details that they shouldn't even be thinking about.
Exactly. And so that the value of the human, right, is our ability to think strategically and think analytically about things. And we just don't have enough time to do that. And yet that's probably where we're adding the most value in our jobs and in building relationships, right? So the salespeople are thinking about building relationships with clients. If they're spending all their time like writing out their notes from a call with a client, that's a waste of their time.
Yeah.
That is not using their relationship skills.
Or even preparing beforehand.
That's right. Or all the prep beforehand. The more we can, to Maddie's point, automate that, make that easier for them, take away the little details so they're spending time on the like sort of highest value add.
Yeah.
That's when we're succeeding.
And I love the fact that your sales team are seeing branding as airtime, that they're seeing it as part of their role, because that's actually a hurdle, I think, for a lot of people, is for the sales team to understand the value of branding. And the fact they're seeing that value already, I think, is fantastic.
I think that's right. And I agree with you. It's not a given. But I do feel that our sales teams at Janus Henderson really do feel the value of brand and kind of want more of it and love it. And they think that it makes their job easier if our brand is stronger. So that's great.
I love that.
I do too. And I love the idea of the value of the human. I think that that's a bigger discussion there that maybe we'll get into a little bit later on as well. We like to frame our podcast using seismic terminology. So in the first phase, we'll talk a little bit about the tremors, about how this movement started within brand. Then we'll get on to the epicenter, so what the world today looks like and how brand has evolved. And then we'll start to look at the future. So we'll think a little bit about the aftershocks. So what's coming next and how do we see brand evolving? And I guess that is probably where we'll unpack a little bit more of the human element and what that will mean in the world of AI, etc. So something to think about for a little bit later on. So let's start first of all with the tremors. Here, I guess we're looking at the evolution that you've seen historically within your role, or maybe even looking further back and how you've seen that change over the years to where we are today. So if I could start maybe with Maddie, how have you seen brand evolve in your role at Peel Hunt?
I think over the last 5 years at Peel Hunt that I've been here, I have seen branding change so much. Even in my role, I actually joined as a graphic designer and I was the first graphic designer or someone similar in my role. And before that, we outsourced to an individual to do our branding, graphic design, etc. So I would say that the branding and the whole brand presence wasn't as strong and it was outsourced. And then because I came in-house and started as a graphic designer, I have seen such a change, especially in my role. I was doing the graphic design and then I moved into being a brand manager, and that is because it's started, I feel like I look more into like the strategy, and it's not just about how things look, it's about, yeah, the strategy, how people see the brand, and there's always so much to be looked at.
Did you feel like the company owned the brand more when you brought it in-house?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've seen, because we had an old brand and we went through a rebrand process in 2021. So that was really interesting seeing the shift. Before, it was very old and like regal feeling, and now we've shifted more into a bit more modern techie feel, and then also having to apply that brand to everything. We've seen growth also by having a podcast studio, the need for podcast and video, and having more accessible forms of content. I think people are straying away, not everyone, but like you need those other platforms to keep up.
Because I know we had this conversation off air just before the podcast. For our listeners, could you just explain about the podcast room that we're sitting in now and what you've done with that? Because I think it's such an interesting story of how you've created this multi-channel brand, if you like.
Yeah, so our research team, they produce research notes and they also produce podcasts and videos to go alongside the research notes. So when a research note gets published, sometimes there's a video or a podcast so that people can listen to or view these interesting highlights about like a company or about one of their sector outlooks. So I think it's a really interesting, great way to do it. And our podcast studio, well, digital media designer, Gabriel, who's in the background there, he is great at putting together all these videos. So
I love that. And I think that's what I've seen in my career is that change from brand being a logo, a colour and very regal and formal to actually being more inclusive and, you know, thinking about how different people will absorb your brand, whether it be a podcast, a video, you know, something in writing, and giving that multi-channel aspect to it, I think is fantastic. I've really seen that change when I look back at the tremors.
I think it's really interesting as well, the way you've described the journey for brand to become more of a strategic lever and to be recognised as a strategic lever in the business. And as you talked about, touching different parts of the organisation as well. So it's not just a marketing tool, but it's actually something that everyone in the organisation recognises.
It's that everyone feeling like they are the brand.
Yes.
I think that's where we want to get to in the future. And I remember back in the beginning of my career, you didn't have any touch points with the brand.
And oftentimes we hear about authenticity within financial services, don't we? And it's about the brand authentically representing what the business is and what the business stands for. So I'd be really interested coming to you, Alana, to understand how you've seen the evolution of brand and maybe dig in a little bit to, you know, what's kind of caused the change that we've seen over the recent years.
Yep, I'm happy to do that. And I have to clarify, they see our brand as air cover, which is actually sort of a wartime reference. So just view it in the brightest, happiest way. But they view it as cover for them to go in and do what they need to do.
Yeah.
So I've been doing this for a really long time. So when I thought about this question, I started laughing because I think brand in the very old and olden days when I started was really kind of your visual identity and like your logo and maybe a tagline. And that was your brand. And that was the whole conversation. Like there wasn't a whole lot more to it than that. And the way that you used your brand was mostly in print. So, you know, I remember when the biggest prank you could pull on someone in your office was to rush into their office after they'd pushed the print button on a 100,000 piece run and say, did you see the typo? You fixed the typo, right? And then they would freak out and then you'd say, no, there's no typo. Or maybe like really nice people didn't do that and just I did that. But
no, I definitely did.
And that, you know, because everything was done in print and you know, we didn't have social media yet. You maybe had a basic website, but it was just brochureware, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't actually an interactive tool. And I think to your question about what has made it change, it's really digital. Everything digital has kind of made it all change. So print is really, it's still used in some ways, but much less. I think to Maddie's point, like you're looking at how can we apply this digitally and what works best for that instead of what used to work best for whatever we did before. So it's added all this flexibility. You don't worry about your typo on your 100,000 piece print run anymore, but now it's incredibly crowded. So how can your brand cut through in a super crowded digital space that everyone is accessing? Because actually it's much easier to do some of the digital stuff than it was to do giant brochure runs. I remember also back in the day, the way you would achieve cut through was to send something really interesting in the mail.
Yeah.
Like no one's really doing that, right? So you'd send an invite to an event and it would be like a 3D kind of pop-up invite and you'd send it in a box and that would be really interesting to open and you get really excited.
See, I still love post. I feel like there's maybe still a channel for that somewhere.
There's a role for post.
Well, it's almost boomeranging, right? So everybody went digital. Then you figured out it's really hard to cut through because everybody's online and everybody's got a website and everybody's got a, you know, LinkedIn page. And so I think brands are actually coming back around to go, oh, everyone stopped doing print. Actually, we could do something interesting.
Yeah. Right. The only issue with post now is that we're in this hybrid world where you can't ask people for their home address and you can't send it to their office.
I also do think that during COVID, everyone stopped printing. And that's when we saw a lot more digital stuff happening. And now we are, you know, doing a bit more print things. And I still think nothing beats the feeling of having like a nice booklet in your hands to come through. People love taking something physical, you know, like into meetings and everything. So I think there still is a need for both and just finding what works for what you're actually doing.
We're probably more likely to use something at an event if someone could have something in their hands and you're not having to deal with the delivery issue.
Yeah.
So we might print something nice or interesting or fun for an event.
And like going back to your point at the beginning, Maddie, like where you said the branding used to be quite regal, I think that was the case for a lot of companies in our industry, you know, companies that are hundreds of years old that carried this traditional look and feel. And I remember even, you know, there were only certain colours that you used and it was like your royal blues and your like deep Harrods greens because it was what was thought of as trustworthy and you know all of those things, and it was always avoid red because that means danger and stop. But that doesn't seem to be the case so much now. Maybe it is where it's gone digital that colors do look different when they're online rather than in print.
I think they look very different in print versus online. There's a lot of things sometimes we design for digital use and then if we have it printed it just can look a bit different. So I think that's one thing we always do keep in mind when we're designing something, if it's going to be printed and online, they are different. I think you can do a bit more with digital. You can make it feel a bit more interesting, but then sometimes that doesn't really translate into print very well.
Do you think there's any other reason though that that has changed within brand, that it's gone from that very sort of traditional fonts and colors to what it is now?
I will jump in on that and say, I do think fonts have modernized and you actually see maybe a range of fonts, but I think colors are something where our industry mostly struggles to differentiate and use different colors. BlackRock actually came out and did it really well. You can see they basically, I think they tried to use all the colors that no one was using so that it would be differentiated and quite different, kind of achieve some of that cut through. And I think they've done a good job of that. But if you look across the space, lots of blue.
Yeah,
lots of blue in our industry. And so you kind of go, we're still like kind of a little bit, and it does look good online too, right? So it looks good digitally, it looks good in print. You know, most people like it.
Yeah.
Feels kind of traditional, feels safe, it's not offensive. So I sort of look across and see a lot of blue still, in especially in our industry, because it feels so sort of safe.
Do you feel like there's a masculine side to using blue?
Maybe.
That's something I've noticed, is that it's more inclusive now, branding, you know, and colors and everything. Whereas when you look back at branding, when I started, it was all very masculine focused. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's where the blue arose from, who knows?
I think more than that as well, it's also masculine aspirations sometimes reflected in the branding historically. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves as the wealth transfers into the hands perhaps of a more diverse group. Mm. So I think this brings us quite neatly to the epicenter, because we've already touched a little bit on cutting through and brand resonance and the brand promise. How do you make decisions about your brand reflecting the customer base or the client base that you're looking to engage with? And I think maybe if I start with you on that one, Alana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the way we're organized at Janus Henderson is we have a centralized brand, creative, digital, multimedia team. So that all sits in my area, and it's considered a global corporate function. And we support all of the activity that happens around the firm. And then outside of that, we actually are quite regionalized in our sales and marketing model. So we've got regional heads of North America, EMEA, LATAM, APAC, and Australia, and they have channel marketing heads in each of those regions. So that's how we're set up. So when we're making brand decisions, the decision ultimately will rest, and the execution ultimately will rest with my group. But we want to make sure that we are taking into account the needs of all the different regions. They're very different. Mm-hmm. The client bases are very different, and you have to tailor it. So we work really, really closely with our channel marketing teams in each region. I do very little without consulting with my channel marketing heads. Maybe they are annoyed by the amount of emails they get from me. I don't know. But we try to really, really bring them in when we're thinking about brand strategy, any major brand decisions, even small brand decisions. We're talking with them because the last thing you want is to appear tone deaf to a local market because you're implementing some sort of central directive that you've decided is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that local market piece is really important. Now we've become such a global industry, you know, the HSBC tagline always comes back to me, you know, the local bank, but it's true, isn't it? You know, you can't just have one global brand that goes everywhere and fits everywhere. You have to look at how that will hit the local market, what it means to them and so on.
Right.
I think that's...
And how you know, maybe some of your core, I think in our case, some of our core brand tenets are the same globally. So we have a purpose statement and a mission and a set of values, and we have a color palette and fonts and a visual identity, and that's pretty much the same. But the way that we use it and the way we promote it is going to be different. So in some regions, social media is like their number one, right? They're doing always on LinkedIn. Everything is social media. It's super important for their market. In other markets, the best lever for them is maybe advertising, right? So they're doing that. So it's some of it is the how, I think, that you tailor, but then also the messaging. So you might have your very top level, like your tagline is the same everywhere, but the campaign you're running might be different.
Yeah.
Right?
Completely agree.
And I think a big challenge in that as well is making sure that you have control over the consistency of the brand, particularly if the brand is changing, so that you're sure that your employees are using the brand mm-hmm. that you have defined as your go-to-market brand now.
Yeah.
So how do you approach that, Maddie?
Yeah, I think because we're a smaller firm, like London is our main office, we've got a small office in New York and in Copenhagen as well. So we are a very tight-knit firm. It is much easier to be able to talk to people and help them with their work. Basically, I help 300 people on brand. We don't really have, I guess, our main brand, that's all set. We've got Peel Hunt, the evolution of business. But I think what I help a lot of people with, it's the different departments. It will be, we have a lot of things kind of automated. We've got like templates and everything that people can use. Mm-hmm. But a lot of things, because we are a smaller firm, can be a bit more bespoke. So everyone can kind of apply their own touch to things. Mm-hmm. We do like to see what everyone's doing and, you know, just make sure everything is kind of kept in line. But I think that's also a good thing as well, that people can apply their own touch to things.
And I think that's something I've seen in my career, is that going back to the Tremors, I know I'm going slightly off piste here, but I remember when people would like save a logo to their desktop and then reuse it somewhere in completely the wrong way and like stretch it out, and you're like, that, where did you get that? But you know, like now, to your point, the fact that we can create templates and we can have that central source of truth, you know, so yes, you can personalize it, but here is what you need to use to make your own document, so that they don't stretch things.
And it also saves them so much time as well when there's the templates. That's basically, I feel like that's one of my main jobs, is making everything super easy for everyone to use, so they don't have to be faffing around with those little things, so that they can work on the actual content that's in these pitch documents.
Yeah. And also I think taking that irritation piece out for them makes them want to use what you've created.
Yeah.
What's funny to think about too is, so Maddie, your firm is a bit smaller. You've got, you know, a more localized presence, and we're a larger firm with more offices that I'm thinking about, but we're using the same strategy. Mm. So I think that's really interesting and hopefully helpful for anybody that's listening, that we do the same thing. We're trying to provide templates. We're making everything centrally available. Here are your logos, here's the icons, here's the imagery that's approved, you know, email signatures even, brand guidelines, Teams backdrops, it's all in a central location, because I don't want them going and like saving the logo to their desktop and stretching it out and making it purple and whatever they're going to do to it. So you make everything available so that no one has to go and try to create things themselves, because you don't want that. You want them to use those same assets. So it's the same strategy.
I think no one wants to be starting from scratch for anything.
Yeah.
You know, everyone wants the easiest, quickest way to be doing things.
It's really interesting because, I mean, as you know, we work with lots of organizations going through digital transformation within FS. And the first thing that we find we need to do with our customers is help them control the chaos, because they have so many versions of the same thing, so many kind of, and brand comes into that obviously, because then you have different logos in different places.
That's right.
And how do you know what's being shared? How do you know what's being read? How do you know that, you know, you're consistent, you're compliant, first of all?
That's a really important piece that's moved from the Tremors to now, is actually seeing, you know, who's used it. Because for me, I could create something amazing that I think is beautiful, but if nobody's using it, you know, what's the point? So, you know, is somebody actually opening it? Are they using it? Are they clicking on it? Is it doing what I wanted it to do? And in this digital world, like when we think back to that print piece, Alana, like...
We didn't know
if they walked out the room and threw it in the bin.
It was actually a lovely time, wasn't it? Because we could just decide it was beautiful, and then that was it.
We could tell ourselves it was beautiful, yeah. But, you know, I think that's also where you've seen the evolution of how things have changed, is because you could see that things became tired or redundant or weren't used anymore. Mm-hmm. You could try something new and go, wow, that really worked. You know, people clicked on that, and that's something that we can then move towards. And I think, Maddie, you put it beautifully with this multi-channel side of things, you know, of recording documents that were previously having to be read through and then giving it in those different options to absorb. I think that's a fantastic side of where we are now when we look at the epicenter.
Yeah, and also with the digital content, you can see the views and what's being interacted with. And I find that quite interesting because the digital bits, if something's not working, you can cut them and still have the base. So yeah, that's quite interesting.
And I guess coming on from that, once you have your brand, how do you protect it? Particularly in this digital world, it's created maybe more challenges in that respect. So how do you approach that? Alana, if I come to you for that one.
So a couple of things to think about there. One is protect it from people stretching my logo and making it purple. So that is a protection mechanism. So that's where we make everything centrally available. And we just continually point people there. This is where you get your logos. This is where you, that's a way of protecting it, right? So that they're actually using things in the right way and not making it up themselves. And then the second thing is we do spend some time thinking about like trademarks and looking at if you're seeing, well, now with AI, you're actually seeing a whole bunch of impersonation pop up. I don't know if everyone has been seeing that in their worlds, but we're getting brand impersonators. We're getting portfolio manager impersonators saying, I'm a portfolio manager for Janus Henderson, so you should invest in this way. And it's not them. And it's AI that is doing this. So we're actually starting to think about brand protection in that way as well as traditional like legal trademarks and things like that. But the more practical one is actually just using the brand the way that we want it to be used. And that's this whole like make everything centrally available and then just use that.
Yeah. Single source of truth.
That's right.
Yeah, that's sort of the main thing that we focus on as well. And also, I do have the ability to be able to talk to everyone in the office that's using it and just check in with them. And I love helping people. So I'm always like telling people like, come to me if you have any questions or need any help with anything, like always here to help. Always, yeah, pointing them to a centralized location.
Yeah. I think the single source of truth, the central location is kind of key because that gives you the platform from which you can grow and drive efficiency and do all the other great things that brand can bring.
Yes, because I'm the opposite of Maddie. I'm like, don't come to me. Don't come to me. I'm not going to be able to get back to you. Go to there. Go to there.
Oh, brilliant. And I think, you know, we managed to get a little bit of the way through the conversation before we started to talk about AI. I think it was inevitable that it would pop up at some point. And that brings us nicely on to the aftershocks and where we see brand moving forward and what dynamic we want to predict. So I guess let's start with, I'm looking around the table, who am I going to choose? Let's start with Gemma.
So I find this really intriguing, you know, the fact that people can go and create their own content now on AI, whereas you used to have to know graphic design or, you know, I could create a logo in seconds on Canva on my phone on an app. And that just seems incredible to me. But how do you keep control of that? You know, and I'm thinking about the new AI videos that you can create. And there was one that was created recently that went viral. And it was who owned it. So if AI has created it and I've created it on AI, I'm still not the owner of that. So how do you keep control of that? And how do you keep that central space if you don't have control over what people are? I think it comes back to that point. As much as things are opening up, I think when we look forward, it's more than ever that we have to have that single source of truth, because things could really get out of hand quite quickly with what people are able to do. So I think it comes back to, let's learn from our mistakes of when we look back at the tremors. It's the same issue, just a different way. Let's keep that single source of truth as we go forward.
That's right.
And have fun, create, you know, like I create all sorts of things on my phone and pretend to my kids that I've, you know, made them rap songs and all sorts. But don't do that to the brand.
Right. Yeah. And use AI for good, right?
Yeah.
I have two thoughts there, which is AI is so big and so powerful that the initial problems we faced were, how do you break it down to what I actually want to use AI for at work? And then how do I use it for good, right?
Yeah.
Because it's huge and it's powerful and you want to use it right. So I actually saw in a recent article on AI that for it to start to work for brands, it needs to feel less IBM and more Pixar, which I thought was like a great quote. Yeah. Because AI that is really clunky or prescriptive or hallucinogenic is not going to help our brands. We do not want to use it in that way. But if it helps create experiences that resonate with our target audiences, especially if we're trying to like work for multiple audiences tailored to what they need in that moment in a way that would be very labor intensive for us to do ourselves.
And I think it's important there to say to companies, bring AI in soon for your staff to use. in a controlled way.
That's right.
Because they will go and use AI elsewhere because everyone wants to do their job easier and, you know, more efficiently and better. And they will find an AI they can use externally. So
that's right. So we've launched an AI tool at Janus Henderson for probably exactly that reason. Like, let's do something that's sort of approved that people can use. And we use it now for multiple things. But one of them is they run transcripts through it from focus groups. So we run a lot of client focus groups. And then we run the transcripts through AI to pull out the themes that are common across the focus groups. That would take hours and hours for someone to do.
It's amazing what things like that can do. We've got Copilot, and after a meeting or a webinar or something, it will pull out the key themes, and someone doesn't have to go through and spend like half an hour of their time.
We've launched a product that's really similar to that. It's called Seismic for Meetings. And I just find this incredible because I started my career off on the sales side. Is it not only records your meeting, but it gives you feedback. So it'll say, you spoke too fast, you spoke too slow.
Oh, I love that.
It also takes away that personal aspect of, you know, if you've actually got that feedback where you can take it on board without being insulted and actually change and continuously grow in your career, I think that's really powerful.
I think so too. Those little micro learnings, they just drive efficiency.
And goes one step further and says, here's the content you should share with them based on what they spoke about. Which is just incredible when you think of that piece where people have to create content after a sales call, you know, and they might, you know, in the olden days, they had to come to us. Well, I know you don't like people coming to you, Alana.
Me and Maddie. Go to Maddie.
And I think it's interesting. It feels like we're entering the era of co-pilots, I think, as opposed to chatbots, you know, ChatGPT, Gemini. I think it's much more now about co-pilots, about controlling the environment that AI is in and using it to drive workflow efficiency, if you like.
And it comes back to that human element that you mentioned, Maddie. I think AI enables us, but we also have to enable AI. Yeah. You know, there has to be that human element to it.
There's always got to be the human element. We are definitely using so much more AI across our firm. We're even developing our own AI tools. But I think that's just the one thing. You can't take away that human element. There's always got to be someone that can filter through. I found when I started to use ChatGPT with financial services, it doesn't understand that kind of language very well, I found. I feel like sometimes, you know, try do some things, I'm like, it just doesn't make that much sense. So I think that's still something that, you know, you always have to have someone looking at it. And
I think looking at another strand as well, kind of the dynamic within the industry where there's a real focus on client experience and an understanding personalization, how to drive deeper personalization. How do you see brand playing a role in that?
Actually, it's funny. So I'm going to answer that maybe with a little bit of an AI lens. But we think a lot about that because we are in markets and they need to receive the information differently. But one of the ways we're actually using AI to drive that personalization in our brand is we can do a recording of a portfolio manager giving like their quarterly update on their performance and actually have it then delivered in the local language of the client. So it's just an audio recording delivered in their language. So like some it's delivered in Cantonese or, you know, Spanish or Greek or something that, you know, RPMs do not speak all these languages. But AI makes that possible so that it can be received in the language of the listener. And I think that is a way that will help our brand to feel like, yes, this is a big global brand, but they actually understand me as a client in, you know, China or Japan or Spain or wherever I am. I think that's really important because I don't want us to feel like a big kind of global unfeeling brand. Like it adds that human touch to it that I think is a nice. But in general, we do a lot of thinking in the brand about that in other ways too. So anytime we're testing sort of central messaging, we translate it into every language as part of the testing process to make sure it actually is going to work in all the languages that we use it in. Because this is, everybody knows these stories, right? Where a brand has gone out with, what is it, the car that like explodes, that bursts into flame, Yugo, or there was the Fiero. There was a car name, and it was, they branded it, and it actually means like something like bursts into flames.
Okay. Yeah.
In another language. So we do a lot of testing like that to try to make sure we're not, you know, yeah, naming something that's like actually a bad word in another language.
Yeah.
And exactly. And do you create feedback loops so that you can see how things are landing, so that you can understand the effectiveness of the brand?
We do. We don't, I mean, bespoke client research is actually quite expensive. So if you were trying to do that all the time, you'd be spending a lot of money on that, but we use our local teams as a feedback loop, right? So the people that are out with clients and then the people that are supporting those people are often very close to what's happening and can give us really helpful feedback on how things are landing.
I think as well, when we look forward, we've got to, I know you touched on it earlier, Rachel, but I was reading an article in the FT about this great wealth transfer. And we've got a very aging population at the moment, and there's going to be a point where all of that wealth is transferred on. And whereas in history, you know, a lot of the time that's gone from male to male, for the first time in a while, it's going to be a big transfer to women. And there's going to be a real need to brand around that, you know, thinking in terms of financial services and women wanting to invest more in philanthropy and ESG. You know, we've got things like the anti-greenwashing campaigns coming out from the FCA anyway around ESG. But there's going to be a real push, I think, towards that when it comes to branding. Would you two agree? I'd love to hear your views.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, we think about that quite a lot, the generational wealth transfer issue, because it's all going somewhere, right? Yeah. And you want to sort of feel like you have a hand in helping decide where it's going to go. We spend a lot of time thinking about DEI. I'm actually on our DEI committee at Janus Henderson, and we, you know, there's so many different angles of it, but you're thinking about wealth transfer, you're thinking about women actually making the financial decisions for a household.
And talking about things going wrong, you know, that brings to mind the NatWest one of the mansplaining, where they had the banker apologizing to women for not teaching them how to use their bank account. And you think that went so wrong, you know, and it's like, it's getting it right.
Yes. And being inclusive, like like in marketing 20 years ago, you weren't looking at all of your stock photography and making sure that it actually represented the broad array of clients that you might be marketing to.
Yeah,
you didn't even look at who was in your photos. I didn't, I don't think, 20 years ago. Now you're like, let's make sure this has a cross representation of, you know, the client base represented in this photo. Let's make sure that, you know, we're using the right terms and that we are not, that everything feels really inclusive.
Yeah.
And then internally, we're thinking about, you know, are we creating a firm where people can grow to the highest levels, whoever they are, right?
Yeah.
Male, female, anybody, whatever experience they have, they should be able to see that there could be a path for them to the highest roles.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a big need as well to coach and develop advisors and the go-to-market teams about this shift and what that means in terms of the brand promise, but also in terms of the way that news or information is delivered, because there's an education aspect to this as well, I think.
So, because it's happening with their clients,
precisely,
right?
Precisely, yeah. So it's very interesting. So we like to wrap up these sessions by asking you to give us one word that summarizes the conversation that we've had today. And I know it's a tall order. It's always a really tricky thing to do. But if you could give me your one word, and then maybe a little bit of an explanation as to why you've chosen that word. So if I start with you, Alana.
One word, not two or three.
I'll give you two.
I think of all the things we were talking about, it's going to end up being three, but I'm going to make it sound like one. We've talked about AI, we've talked about the central source, we've talked about why we do what we do. I think what comes to mind is use it for good. Use for good, right? Make AI work for you for good. Make your central brand tools work for you for good so they don't get stretched out in purple. Make your, you know, your marketing and brand be your air cover for your team so you're supporting them. Really everything that we're trying to do is like use it for good so that it's adding as much value as it can.
Brilliant. That. Thank you so much. Maddie, over to you.
I would say it's about understanding, just like always understanding the brand and the purpose and understanding what your clients want, understanding what your teams need, all the different departments, and just, yeah, always having that, it's that human element to everything, understanding as a person how other people use things, see things, see your brand, see the company, yeah, all about understanding.
Perfect. That's excellent. Thank you so much, Maddie. And the last word to you, Gemma.
I'm stuck between inclusion and feedback, because I think it's inclusion because as we move forward, the brand has to be more inclusive. But to your point, Maddie, you know, it's that feedback part as well, because how do you make it more inclusive? So I'm stuck between the two words.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you all so much. It's been a great conversation. And I think we could have talked for much, much longer. We covered a lot of ground. So thank you for your time. And we'll speak to you next time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thanks.
You've been listening to Seismic Sessions, enabling the financial services industry. Don't forget to like and subscribe to stay up to date with the latest opinions on all things revenue enablement within the financial sector.